This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am essentially Mark Dolan, and this is Mark Dolan Eats the News. Let's get cracking. I'm insulin dependent, and I've just had a Mars bar. We'll start with the news that Apple, the world's largest technology company, has reported profits of £7 billion in the last year. CEO Tim Cook was going to tweet the news, but his iPhone just ran out of power. New crime figures published today suggest crime has dropped to its lowest level since 1981. You may celebrate. I find this depressing. It means even Britain's criminals are lazy underachievers. The new boss of Barclays Bank is going to be paid in excess of £8 million a year. To save money, Barclays are now going to stop handing out those free blue pens. Tony Blair has finally apologised for the Iraq war, which is proof that he really is a good human being after all. Or perhaps more realistically, like TalkTalk's broadband customers, his brain has been hacked by jihadi terrorists, which strangely makes him more likeable. David Cameron is to set... Excuse me, because we're about to talk about porn, which is why I screwed that one up. David Cameron is set to fight to keep porn filters on the internet following the EU's claim they are illegal. I will fight to clean up the internet and keep the filth people have access to a minimum. Cameron clearly not interested in winning the votes of lonely single men in their 20s and 30s. A cafe owner in Dublin has barred vegans from his cafe after they complained on Facebook about his menu options. The vegans were going to fight the ban, but in the end, they just didn't have the energy. A BBC insider has been secretly recorded alleging that half of BBC staff have drug dealers who deliver cocaine, ecstasy, and other hard stuff straight to their desks. I've got to say, there has to be some truth in it. I mean, someone was definitely high when they recommissioned Doctors. Two famous footballers are set to come out as gay in the next few weeks. What a great move, which we salute here on Mark Dolan Eats the News. There's been a lot of speculation as to who it could be. Our sources tell us it may be Cristiano Ronaldo and Joan Terry. Aldo have recorded record profits as their growth in the UK looks unstoppable. The supermarket's latest offer to customers involves spending £5, in return for which they get a 2-kilogram bag of potatoes, a 500-gram pack of cheddar cheese, and 3 members of staff. Prince Harry has travelled to Washington, USA to promote the Invictus Games for injured soldiers. It was a proud moment for the Prince as he met President Obama at the White House. His father was present too, although Prince Charles couldn't make it. Following the success for smokers of Stoptober, next month sees a campaign to tackle obesity. Put that burger down, Vember. There has been widespread fallout from the aforementioned hacking of TalkTalk customers' accounts. Here at FUBAR, our servers are all protected by TalkTalk and we have the absolute utmost faith in their safety. Die, all of you infidels, die, death to the West and the black snarling dog of evil that is the United States of America. And finally, the designer Wayne Cooper has caused a splash in the world of fashion by creating a dress covered in, wait for it, vaginas. Which just goes to show how ahead in the fashion stakes my first guest on this show is. Yes, top comedian Leo Kirst, who's wearing a polyester onesie covered in cocks.
That's right.
Leo, great to have you on the show.
It's great to be here, Mark.
We will just pretend that joke about David Cameron and pornography didn't happen. You see, that's the joy of live radio.
Right, yeah.
Now, welcome to the show. First of all, top comedian, hilarious man. Are you somebody that talks about the news in your comedy?
Yeah, I sometimes do. The trouble with doing stuff about the news is you write a great joke like you did, like you just did. You write a great joke about the news. You can use it for maybe a week and then everybody forgets about it and you can't use it anymore.
Absolutely. That's what's great about this show. It's ultimately highly disposable.
Yeah.
So let's enjoy what will be a shelf life of approximately 2.5 minutes for this show as we delve into our first story. Cocaine at the BBC.
Cocaine at the BBC, yeah. I mean, this is disgraceful. This is like taxpayers' money. I know it's not technically taxpayers' money. It's licence fee money.
Of course
this is why I feel so justified in never paying my licence fee. You know what I mean?
Do you not pay your licence fee?
I haven't paid in 10 years. The guy came around to the door to, like, they sent me all these letters and the guy came around to the door and I was hungover and I answered in my underpants. I didn't know it was going to be a licence fee guy. And
who were you expecting? Blimey. Your dealer,
probably. I didn't know, but like, I didn't think it was worth putting trousers on for. And so I went to the door. The guy came to the door. I was like, oh, look, I've got a TV, but it's not hooked up to an aerial, which was true at that point. And I said, come on in, I'll show you. And he was like, nah, it's all right, I'll take your word for it. And since then, they haven't been back.
All right.
I do live in a place where it's not registered as a property. It's like industrial.
Really? This gives me a sort of very troubling insight into your home life. I mean, what is sheltered accommodation? What's going on here? But yeah, I suppose you've got a great solution now. Maybe we should all try that. Anybody coming to the door looking for money, whether it's the tax man or the license fee guy.
Just don't wear trousers or wear your polyester vinyl suit that's covered with penises.
Yes, that would be the one. Here's the thing. What is the etiquette? If someone comes to your front door, like, you know, let's say it's Amazon delivery or something. Yeah. Do you have to be fully clothed? Because when I'm indoors, when I'm relaxing, the first thing that happens is my trousers come off.
Yeah, right? Obviously.
That's how I roll.
Can't relax with trousers on.
No, and which is obviously, you know, causes problems when I'm in a hotel or in a restaurant or anything like that. But, you know, I just feel like, okay, I'm kicking back here. I'm at home, I'm chilling out. And I do feel like sometimes I don't know whether I can answer the door to the postman if I'm just in my boxers. What's acceptable?
I think it's your front door. If you don't want to wear trousers, you don't have to wear trousers. People didn't fight in a war, so you have to wear trousers to answer your own front door.
Is that what the Second World War was about?
I'm pretty sure.
That's so good, because I never quite got to the bottom of
it. Have you ever seen Nazis not wearing trousers?
It's a really good point. We defeated those guys with their long trousers. Here's the thing.
Sharply ironed.
I have this big argument with my missus about boxer shorts and the public sphere.
Is that what you call it?
Well, look, here's the... So I enjoy a bit of swimming. I like the odd outdoor swimming. There's some outdoor ponds in North London.
Oh, yeah,
the kind of Hampstead Heath. Yeah, worth it. And they're free and they're very good. And you're out and swimming with the ducks and all that. And I sometimes forget to bring my actual swimming trunks.
Right.
And my missus castigates me because I go in my boxer shorts.
Oh, she shouldn't do that.
Well, then she's castigating me. We're two kids. We don't want any more. But we go swimming. And I have done this once. I did it in a municipal swimming pool.
Right.
Okay.
Where I was going.
I was in my underpants rather than... I forgot my swimming trunks. Is that the thin end of the sexual...
That's not just the thin end. That's halfway down the wedge.
Is that borderline?
You know, have wet t-shirt competitions because they don't really hide anything. Especially, like, you know, when you've got, like... You know what I mean? It's a very... You know, it's not just a nipple.
Yeah, at least it's not.
Unless it's a cold day.
Yeah. But the thing about me, with my physiology, a lot of the pools I go to, the water's ice cold. So everything sort of tightens up, and it could comfortably be Caitlyn Jenner anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's very... When my body's cold, it's kind of gender neutral, if I'm honest.
Like a Ken doll. Sucks everything up.
A little bit. But I have been swimming... In boxer shorts, and what you're saying is that's basically that's the sort of first rung on the ladder of a sexual attack in a swimming pool.
I'd say it's about 8 rungs up.
Wow.
Okay. On a step ladder.
See if I'm troubled, but mine are black. And there's a button. Thanks very much. Boom. There's a button which keeps my roaring manhood, you know, out of harm's way.
Right.
What I love about this is I love the awkwardness. Leo Kerr, it's only taken 12 minutes and he's already broken. But we've got another. I saw on TV,
do you ever see that show called Tribe with Bruce Parry? Because he goes and lives with the tribe in the rainforest and he does whatever they do.
Yeah, I saw a bit of that,
And they did a thing, he was staying with this tribe, and they do a thing where they push their penises inside out inside them with a stick so they can run through the forest without it getting caught in brambles and stuff. So he let them do it. He let them try and push his penis inside out. Can you imagine somebody doing that to you? Push his penis inside out inside him with a stick, and he passed out from the pain. And then when he came round, he let them have another go. I was like, man, this guy deserves like a medal.
This is not strange. You've just described my wedding night. So we'll have to see whether it's... I mean, it's interesting because the BBC have got... I mean, we know drugs are rife in the media. Yeah. That's the bottom line. I suppose the reason why we're not talking about ITV and all those... It's because, as you say, it's funded by the taxpayer via an extra tax, which is the licence fee.
We don't have any choice in.
No.
People used to say, oh, the BBC's so wonderful. BBC's so wonderful, best TV in the world. Like, look at it. Look at it now. Look at it. Everything I watch is on, like, Netflix or something like that.
Yeah.
BBC is all, you know, strictly come dancing, which ironically you need to take cocaine and ecstasy to enjoy.
Well, I agree with you there. I mean, if you look at how much the license fee costs, it's almost £150, isn't it? Netflix, which is pretty much all the best telly that's ever been made.
Yep.
And that's what, £6 a month?
Yep.
So that's my mathematics tell me that's
less.
Thank you. Exactly. And you get, so I don't know, do we need a public service broadcaster? Do we need a broadcasting organization that doesn't have any profit pressure on it?
I don't know.
But you don't consume much BBC content these days?
Not really, no. And I mean, because if you have commercial broadcasters like Channel 4, ITV, they've got public service remits written into their contracts, into their codes and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know really. I just wonder whether America is a bigger market, and therefore there are enough competing companies and networks to produce innovation and quality content. I just wonder whether our market is a bit smaller, and if you lost the BBC, you would lose some of that plurality of creative voices. I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean,
at the same time, it is a very sort of Oxbridge oriented, old boys club that it's hard to sort of break into. It's hard to hear anything.
That's really interesting. You're speaking from the point of view of a very funny, talented artist in your own right, and you're thinking to yourself, if I wanted to be a comedian on the BBC, it's a closed shop. Is that how it feels?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And even, they make stabs, they pay lip service to diversity and stuff, but what they do is they get like the equivalent of a sort of white Oxbridge guy, but happens to be a woman or happens to be ethnic or something like that, but there's no real difference.
Yeah, although I got to say, I would probably pay to watch somebody who is a white Oxbridge guy who's also a woman and black. I mean, whoever that guy is deserves their own TV series. I think maybe you should do that. Maybe you could... I mean, this is going to seem inappropriate, but maybe you could half black up... Just from the waist down. And what you do is you go to the meeting in your boxers like you do with the tax collector.
Yeah, yeah. And they can't refuse.
That's just a pair of black silk boxers.
It's a loophole in the system. You don't wear trousers, you get your own way. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Nobody can say no to Mr. No Pants.
It takes us actually nicely over to the area. I mean, the drugs thing is interesting because, we know they're rife. What's more interesting and a bigger story is how cocaine use has now entered the mainstream. It's not just media wankers, if you'll forgive my language, at the Groucho Club doing lines of coke and all of it. It's everywhere. It's bank managers. It's
lawyers.
Exactly.
Primary school teachers.
You would need cocaine for a day of children, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say good luck to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Put it in their tea.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is rife, isn't it? And I don't know whether you've noticed it on the circuit, but I've heard comics complaining about, we're used to drunk people and drunk hecklers and the verbal diarrhea and all of that. I think there's a new breed now of audience members who are coked up to the nines, who are a different kind of pain in the ass.
Yeah, and it manifests itself in different ways because somebody on cocaine, they don't really find stuff funny, but they want to be centre of attention, so they'll heckle in a really unfunny, quite aggressive way that's quite hard to deal with in a way that keeps the energy and the funniness of the night flowing. And also they do things like you get the really irritating over-laughers, like they laugh in a way that they want everybody to look at them and it's so irritating. And with those ones, you can't even do anything because they're, if you say anything to them, you're being a dick to somebody who's enjoying the show.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, that's the thing about those people who are kind of having their own little comedy show in their head, really. And the laughter, you think that's great for us, but the timing's wrong and it screws up our timing.
Yeah,
and it
makes
everyone else feel self-conscious.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, really. I mean, what's really hard about, cocaine and... I'm not sure what the other sort of... There's obviously lots of legal highs out there, but... You can't detect it, can you? Alcohol is really easy to detect. I mean, you can kind of see it in someone's behaviour, really.
Yeah, yeah.
You sort of start to look back at, when alcohol was the main drug of choice of the human race, it almost looks like the good old days. It's like you knew where you were.
Yeah. Yeah, now people are on a cocktail of different drugs. Everybody's got their different... Because all these shops and internet selling the legal highs.
Yeah.
Al Ladd. I've seen some like crazy stuff. There's all this stuff that like mimics acid, mimics... there was something called Gogaine that mimics cocaine.
Right.
They're legal for a few months. But they have bizarre effects.
Do you think, and this is on the creative side, as a creative funny man, and this obviously relates to the BBC and them all being coked up to the nines, is there any element to which a drug can aid the creative process? Can we cut them some slack and think, well, probably they're making great telly because they're high?
You could maybe say that if they were making great telly. But they're generally not. I think some drugs are good for creativity. If you're with your mates and stuff, if you have a few drinks, or if you take mushrooms, it's mushroom season at the moment. Mushrooms are great fun, and they're not like a drug. That you feel like you've been sort of spiritually cleansed after taking them. So mushrooms are great. Cocaine turns people into sort of self-centered, aggressive, loudmouthed boors who can't really interact. So I'm not so sure it's good.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we'll continue this conversation after our first record. We're going to mourn the fact that Phil Collins has announced he's coming out of retirement. Apple profits all-time high, the richest company in human history, £7 billion. Where does a smartphone go from here? Drunk British people on holiday, and a question to our audience: As pensions soar and living standards reach pre-recession levels, have we never had it so good? In keeping with that, here is a classic track, Super Rich Kids, Frank Ocean. Don't go anywhere.
Too many bottles of this wine we can't pronounce. Too many bowls of that green, no Lucky Charms. The maids come around too much. Parents ain't around enough. Too many joyrides in daddy's Jaguar. Too many white lies and white lines. Super rich kids with nothing but loose ends. Super rich kids with nothing but fake friends. Start my day up on the roof. There's nothing like this type of view. Point the clicker at the tube. I prefer expensive news. New car, new girl. New ice, new glass. New watch, good times, babe. It's good times, yeah. She wash my back 3 times a day. This shower head feels so amazing. We'll both be high. The help don't stare. They just walk by. They must don't care. A million, one, a million, two. 100 more will never do. Too many bottles of this wine we can't pronounce. Too many bowls of that green, no Lucky Charms. The maids come around too much. Parents ain't around enough. Too many joyrides in daddy's Jaguar. Too many white lies and white lines. Super rich kids with nothing but loose ends. Super rich kids with nothing but fake friends. Real love. I'm searching for a real love. A real love. I'm searching for a real love. Oh, real love.
Alright. Close your eyes to what you can't imagine. We are the Zanny Nashin', Caddy Smashin', Bratty Assy, Matty Snatchin', Daddy's Jaggin', use this shit for batting practice. Adam and Annie thrashing, purchasing crappy grams with half the hand of cash you handed. Panic and patch me up, Pappy done lashkied us, toying with raggy hands, and Mammy done had enough. Brash as fuck, breaching all these aqueducts. Don't believe us, treat us like we can't erupt. Yep.
We end our day up on the roof. I say I'll jump, I never do. But when I'm drunk, I act the fool.
Talking about.
Do they sew wings until it suits? I'm on that ledge. She grabs my arm. She slaps my head. It's good times, yeah. Sleep himself a sip of fun. Down like 60 stories, and some don't end the way they should. My silver spoon is very good. A million, one, a million cash. Close my eyes and feel the crash.
Too many bottles of this wine we can't pronounce. Too many bowls of that green, no Lucky Charms. The maids come around too much.
Parents ain't around enough. Too many joyrides in daddy's Jaguar. Too many white lies and white lines. Super rich kids with nothing but loose ends. Super rich kids with nothing but fake friends.
Real life, ain't that something rare?
I'm searching for
real
love.
Love.
fantastic product. Tune it.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
It's 12:24, comedian Leo Kurse with me, Mark Dolan. Mark Dolan eats the news. We have another 35 minutes of chewing up the big stories of the week and spitting them out into some kind of modern version of a spittoon. We have got a lot of stories to get through. I want to keep the mood up because this is allegedly an entertainment format, okay, Leo? But I'm afraid there's quite a lot of stories that this week are just, ugh, okay? I'm afraid there's people capsizing and that's a disaster. And then we've got ISIS on the rampage. We've got tensions with Russia.
Yeah.
We've got a cost of living crisis. People are struggling. Tax credits are not coming through. And now to cap it all, Phil Collins is coming out of retirement. I mean, what are you... Is there any point anymore to any of this?
Phil Collins, yeah, I mean... I don't know why. I mean, surely he's got all the money he needs.
Yeah.
Why is he coming back?
Well, that's it. I don't really know. I mean, listen, this is a guy... I mean, there isn't really a rock star out there that shouldn't have just... been blown up when they were like 29. That's yeah. really, I mean, I don't wish death on anyone, but if you're an iconic musician,
yeah,
you like know, Lennon, I mean, we miss him to this day,
yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
he did, he went out in a way, he just got out at the top,
yeah, yeah, yeah. They don't have time to get back, they don't get to 64 and start coming back and doing an album of easy listening. The thing about Phil Collins, I mean, he's sort of heartening, he harks back to a time when you could be rubbish and still be successful. That's the thing about the 80s, like now, all the things in the 80s, I used to watch pop videos and think, when I grow up, I'm going to direct pop videos. I'm going to, you know, all this stuff, like the films, everything was rubbish. The music was appalling. Everything just looked like you could do it. Now it is all, everything's so well done and well made. You know, people spend years studying this stuff, become specialised in each aspect of it. I can't make a Harry Potter film. I can't make a, like, Shakira video. Like, it's
true.
It's depressing. And I can only, yeah. like, I can get a job in a coffee shop or something. You know what I mean? There's nothing that, for the rubbish man to do anymore.
It's, I know, I do agree. With you, and therefore, I don't know if it's going to be a nostalgia thing, because there was a time when this guy, it's one of those sort of British contradictions, isn't it? He's had a plethora of hits. If you looked at a statistic, you'll probably find he's in the top five best-selling solo artists of all time or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? He'll be, looking back on it, he'll be like, I don't know, Handel or, you know, Chopin or say, not quite Mozart, yeah. that'll be the Beatles, but, you know, Phil Collins will be,
yeah, yeah.
you know, in a thousand years, people will be listening to, like, Sussudio, thinking, really? Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, that was the best you could do?
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, it's because he was up against the Wurzels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You had to buy him or the Wurzels.
What's the thing? Because I'm not the world's greatest expert on Phil, but I'm guessing that his best work was when held back and controlled and restrained by Genesis.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like sort of funneled a little bit and filtered out.
Yeah, yeah. And also when he acted as the great train robber in that film, Buster.
Mm. Mm. Look, is this just the tall poppy syndrome? Because he does seem to be, I mean, for comedians, Phil Collins is just one of those people you're allowed to just verbally abuse.
Yes.
For some reason, he's just considered a bit of an annoyance, a public irritant. I suppose he didn't help himself with the whole tax exile thing, right? That didn't, because he moved to Switzerland, and we're thinking, well, that's not so cool.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Phil, we could have a hospital named after you, Phil, with dialysis machines, like kids getting MRI scans. Instead, you've spent it on, like, probably a guitar-shaped swimming pool and a Fabergé egg, you prick.
And there is no answer to that. You are listening to Mark Dolan Eats the News and helping me eat the news and masticating the news far better than me. Is the wonderful Leo Kurse. Let's have a word on Apple. So Apple is now the richest company in human history.
Yeah.
And they, in the last year, have made a profit of £7.2 billion.
It's insane, isn't it?
It's insane. I don't know. What's the end game for smartphones and for a company like Apple? I mean, are they just going to keep improving their phones forever now? Is that it? Is it the end of history?
I don't know, but I mean, my phone, I mean, it's not an Apple phone, it's an Android phone, but if you showed me that when I was like 8 or something, I'd have thought it was from an alien civilization.
Correct.
It's incredible. It's like the, it's, you know what it reminds me of? The bit in Superman where they lock General Zod into those spinning shards and he goes spinning through space. Except not just, it doesn't just lock up General Zod, it's also got angry birds. You can talk to your mum on it. It's amazing.
It is. It is unbelievable. I think that story is going to run and run. Next up on our list is designer vaginas. Now, this is quite extraordinary, which is that the rate of females going in for a nip and a tuck to improve the cosmetic appearance of their lady garden is at an all-time high. Yeah. Fueled by a desire, to quote the Mail Online, I'll get back to you on that sentence. Here's the quote: to look good in yoga pants and bikinis.
Oh, really?
49% rise. I have female relatives who probably
where's this going?
Yeah, they literally applaud themselves when they run, and it's not. I'm actually for this. Because the camel toe fills me with terror. I've stopped. I used to be virgin active, and it was just not good. More valleys than, like, do you know what I mean?
Really?
Not good.
Right, yeah.
Not feeling it. More camels than in Saudi Arabia. Really? So I'm thinking to myself, bring on the labial.
The nip and tuck. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm of the opinion, like, I mean, what does a good looking vagina look like? I can't tell the difference. And I think, you know, men don't really, we're not too bothered about, you know, what a vagina looks like. We're not that prissy. Like, a man, when you get down to it, probably isn't going to be like, oh, sorry, love, now I'm thinking about it, I've seen your fanny, and it's just not pretty enough, so I'm not going to shag you. You know what I mean? No man has ever said that.
No,
you know
no
mean?
Man, a man will not look a gift camel in the mouth.
In the toe.
Correct. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's completely screwed up, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's insane. And I just wonder whether what really drives all cosmetic surgery is misogyny, is actually, this is a little bit of a serious moment in the show, but is hatred of women. You know, in other words, it's like everything about your body is not right. The way you're born is not right, and it all needs to be fixed. And it used to be the boobs, and it was the cheekbones, and now it's even the vagine, the holy grail.
Yeah, and I think it's exposure to pornography, because, I mean, the current generation of young women, they've been exposed to hardcore porn since, you can get a hardcore porn on any device, even your General Zod-style
really?
Mobile
really?
Phone.
Can we just stop the show and work out how to do that?
Maybe not a toaster, but pretty much any device. And it's having this huge impact on girls. They're feeling like they've got to keep their bodies to unrealistic standards, like have surgery in their vaginas, have sex with more men they feel comfortable with, do things purely for the man's sexual pleasure. But there's probably some downsides as well. Am I right? All right.
I tell you what, and amen to that. Speaking of porn.
Well, I tell you what, like, just before we talk about that, I think what we really need,
it's not like you to put porn off.
What we really need is not plastic surgery on vaginas. We need plastic surgery on testicles. Testicles are the ugliest things in nature. And what's a cruel God put testicles right next to something we've got to get girls to touch? It's terrible. My testicles look like they'd replicate if you got water on them. You know what I mean? They look like they're going to bite somebody. Look like Gordon Ramsay's forehead if he was a werewolf. It's terrible. And they're constantly moving as well, constantly adjusting for, like, heat or optimal. Have you ever sat and watched your testicles?
No, they're a disaster. I've never sat and watched my testicles, but...
Well, after the show, go to the toilet and have a look at them, because they're constantly moving.
I must say, I've just cancelled my Netflix, so I'm going to need something to watch in the evening, so I might give that a go.
Well, it's better than most of the BBC output, you know what I mean?
Just a pair of bollocks and that'll be it. Yeah, I mean, you're right. They are... The design flaw is quite extraordinary. As you say, unaesthetic and ridiculously sensitive.
Yeah. Why are they not? My brain is behind a hard carapace of skull. You know what I mean? Like, keeps it safe. Like, my testicles are the sorest part of my body, and they're flapping around on the end of bungee ropes, just waiting to get knocked by things.
They are. If ever you're, like, doing a Sunday roast and you go through the fridge and there's always a couple of small, slightly sort of wizened, worried-looking new potatoes that have slightly gone past their best.
Yeah.
And that's what men are actually shipped with. It's not a good look, is it?
Maybe we should start wearing trousers again.
Do you think there will come a time when... I mean, is plastic surgery going to ultimately be like a visit to the hairdressers?
Possibly, yeah. Because, I mean, I guess it's getting cheaper. It's getting less, you know, there's less scars, less recovery time. When everybody starts getting it, then everybody starts needing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like nobody used to wash. People used to just smell. Then somebody started washing. Some asshole started washing. And now we've all got to wash every day instead of just smelling. Same with, like, getting a haircut and stuff like that.
It's true. It's true. Washing is historically a bit of a bourgeois thing to do. It's a sign of like it's conspicuous consumption. You're basically showing off.
Yeah, yeah.
By not smelling.
By not humming
as you walk past.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you have anything done? Because I'm looking at you now, and you're a fine figure of a man. You're 6 foot six in height.
Right. Yeah.
You're a good example. You're a good male specimen, I would say.
Thanks. I'd have my testicles moved to my armpits. Out of harm's way. Nobody ever gets hit in the armpit.
Yeah, that was it. And every time you scratch your armpit, you might get a little frisson.
No one will realise that
you're being a perv.
Yeah.
It would be very nice. Actually segues us slightly, and hold fire on David Cameron and pornography for a moment, because Caitlyn Jenner is never far out of the news. Jermaine Greer, the iconic feminist, has castigated, and I'm loving that word today, that's today's word, Caitlyn Jenner for seeking the limelight with her gender reassignment.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, it's probably the most sort of publicised story of the year, really. I can't decide whether Caitlyn Jenner is like the Nelson Mandela of transgender people now, just a wonderful flag bearer, or another annoying celebrity.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the thing is, transgender people are the last segment in society that's genuinely, properly, openly discriminated against.
Yeah.
So I think that's why people, really took Caitlyn Jenner's side and, celebrated her, coming out and making the change. So, I mean, I can see why people, are like, oh, what's all this fuss about? It's just one of the Kardashians having a sex change, whatever. But, I mean, on a more sort of global, a wider scale, I think it's great that people are breaking down this last sort of vestige of discrimination.
Well, yeah, there are a number of transgender and also transvestite comedians out there.
Well, I was born a woman.
Well, so. I can see that. Still, I thought it was man boobs. Well done you.
I've had them augmented.
Comedy does sort of attract these, people who don't fit in. It's a perfect business if you're a little different, isn't it?
And totally.
We work with comics who, have had some gender reassignment. Unfortunately, because comics get paid so badly, the reassignment is generally like not very good, is it? But I know a male/female comic who's got boobs now and no cock, but still a beard, and like, oh dear, somebody's doing this all on the NHS, aren't they? But I mean, I suppose because we've got a real debate here, which is, to what extent can our society you're being very groovy about it because you're a liberal comedian.
I'm actually very right wing.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're disguising it very brilliantly. But we do have a dilemma in our society. Well, obviously, anybody that feels they are another gender, you've got to be very sympathetic to that. Good luck to them. And it's a courageous and also physically very brave thing to do.
I think realistically, though, if I decided to have gender reassignment surgery, I think I've just left it too late.
I'm left it too late.
You know what I mean? It's either going to... fair enough, if I was a millionaire like Caitlyn Jenner, then I can have the surgery that's going to make me look, like a sort of good-looking woman like she is. But if I did it with my resources, can you imagine? I would be that person with a beard and the wonky misshapen breasts. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, just not
the penis like sellotaped to my leg. You know what I mean? It just wouldn't... It'd be a Mexico hotel room job.
You really would. You'd have to go to Thailand to get laid, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I think the real dilemma, there's not many people who are hard-hearted enough to say you shouldn't be allowed to have a procedure like that.
Yeah.
But I suppose a couple of questions are, should the NHS pay for it?
Is
one thing.
Well, you can get like weird things on the NHS. Like, I know there's a comedian who's got a sort of funky haircut, and he's had hair... that stuff, Propecia or whatever it's called, that stops your hair falling out. He said that in the NHS because he went to them and said, it's making me depressed that my hair is falling out.
Huh.
So, what's the difference between that and... I'd have thought that's more frivolous than gender reassignment.
And we had Josie Cunningham, who's one of those people famous for just being famous, who she became well-known and came to the public's attention because she got her boobs on the NHS.
Right.
And she was a figure of vitriol, really.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time, I suppose the devil's in the detail. If you can prove, as you normally have to do with the NHS, if you can prove that you know, through psychological tests and everything, that it's affecting your quality of life and your health by not being a man or a woman, then maybe that's the way to go. I mean, I'm curious, is it going to be the tail that wags the dog? Is the fact that, you know, this is more accepted now, is it going to make more people do it, even if they necessarily wouldn't originally have done so?
Yeah, possibly.
Kind of create a market for this.
Yeah, yeah. People become aware of it and then think, hey, maybe I'm a chick.
Yeah. And that's it. It's really. And then the other really big dilemma is, does society treat a female as the same as a male? So let's say if you were a male and you become a female, the state retirement age for females is younger than for men.
Ooh.
So does that mean you get to retire a couple of years earlier?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Sporting events, can you, if you a man who becomes a woman?
Well, there has been controversy about that, because there's an MMA fighter who was born a man, has converted, gone transgender to become a woman, but still has, you know, the sort of like, he's basically a massive bloke, and he's going into the ring with women. I mean, they're pretty good at fighting as well, but he's basically got the physiology of a man, just no penis or whatever, and smashing women in the face. Is that right?
Seems a little bit harsh, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
We've got more from Leo Kern. This is Mark Dolan Eats the News. After this next record, we're going to talk about Tony Blair finally apologising for the Iraq war, and how important is your toilet? It's all the big questions on Mark Dolan Eats the News.
Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
This song's all about drugs. They'll enjoy this at the BBC. Mark Dolan Eats the News is FUBAR Radio, and with me in the studio is the magnificent comedian Leo Kirst. Now, Leo, tell me this. What's your social media handle? Let's get the plug in, because people will be hearing this thinking, this is very good. He's good. This should be Leo Kirst Eats the News. FUBAR, I'm on a very, very tight, watertight contract. They're not even enjoying the show, but there's no escape for them for the next 7 years. What's your Twitter handle?
It's Comedy Leo.
There you go.
Yeah.
No pressure there then. Let's just put the word comedy in. You enjoy that, don't you? You set the expectations very high.
I put a lot of puns on there because they fit in the Twitter.
Oh,
the Twitter
do
thing.
You? Yeah, and yeah. Has it? Because some comics say that social media, Twitter, has sort of facilitated the writing process for them because you've got a platform.
And it works as a sort of database of puns as well. You can download your Twitter feed and it's got all the puns you've written, and then you can list them all out and do a gig.
Well, yeah, because it's always occurred to me that with Twitter, if you do or social media elsewhere, if you tweet a joke, the number of retweets are like the volume of the laughter, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah.
And if you get like 10 or 12 retweets, you're like, okay, that's a banker.
Yeah, yeah. Although sometimes jokes work better written down than they do read out, which is a lot of my jokes, unfortunately. Like, I had one a couple of days ago, it came out that bacon causes cancer.
Yeah.
So I said I had one bacon roll this morning, then I had two more.
Oh, you see, now that's very strong.
But it didn't work live.
You tried it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, the problem with comedy is it exists in its own ecosystem, doesn't it? So there's a Twitter kind of joke that just works on Twitter. Then there's a live stand-up joke, which kind of works on.
Yeah.
And then I think I don't know what you think, but I think you've got to kind of watch it with Facebook and stuff, because I like to sometimes post the odd gag on Facebook, but that's a kind of community of colleagues and friends, and you don't really want to be selling your wares on Facebook, do you?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah,
you know, you don't want to be, you can't do too much self-publicity on Facebook, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah.
Facebook
is more for sort of arguing with people in a petty way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And posting photographs of what are hopefully your children.
Yeah. Can you imagine if there's somebody out there just posting photos of somebody else's children as they grow up?
Yeah. That's... You're like, look at this cutie. Hashtag, hashtag Tesco Express, hashtag Mile End. It wouldn't be good, would it?
No.
So I tell you what also wouldn't be good and wasn't good was the Iraq War. I mean, the Iraq War, looking back on it, was
quite a bad war.
Rubbish, wasn't it? It was totally
really bad war.
It was like
compared to the Second World War, which was a great war. I mean, it was great. Like, we were definitely fighting the bad. We were definitely on the right side in that war.
Yeah.
We were definitely, we're fighting Nazis. They were doing bad, really bad things. We were trying to stop them doing bad things. It was a very photogenic war. It was like great movies came out of it. Amazing movies. Yeah. Like the Iraq War, not only was it a horrible war, loads of civilians killed, like turmoil in all those countries, like rise of ISIS and the hatred of the West, but also the films that came out of it have been, like, so far pretty rubbish. There was Jarhead, that was boring.
Yeah, it was dull, yeah.
I can't even think of another one.
No, it's, I agree, it's just the main, I mean, in a way you sort of judge any historical incident and just see how Hollywood has dealt with it as to whether it was a good thing or not, ultimately. And, oh my God, so this is an apology. I mean, too little, too late doesn't even go there, does it?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, one feels with Tony Blair that there's some other agenda as to why this apology has come through.
He wants to be Prime Minister of Iraq. So this
maybe
is
he should get that gig. Let him sort it out.
Well, he was the Middle East peace envoy for a while. And I'm not saying this because I'm bitter. I don't have Middle East peace envy. Am I right? I'll stop doing puns.
He's here all week. Actually, he's not, thank God.
But yeah, he was for a while, which is kind of ironic.
It was just a touch ironic. I think the British public, there's unfortunately no rehabilitation for Tony Blair, really, is there? I mean, the only thing I just think of, I wonder, is that, I don't know, can Tony Blair be just a bit annoyed? Because if you look at the state of the Labour Party, so they've lost two elections in a row now, the crushing defeat at the last one.
Yeah.
And also a leader who, obviously a very principled man, Jeremy Corbyn, but does look largely unelectable. He must be thinking to himself, well, he won three general elections in a row for the Labour Party. And if you separate to one side the Iraq War.
Oh, absolutely.
Most of the rest of it was fine.
It was great. There was the economy was doing great. We had Blur versus Oasis.
The pop music was really good.
Yeah.
The Hollywood films about Tony Blair were very good at the time.
Yeah.
It's, the guy can feel a little disgruntled that his legacy has been sort of sullied by, war.
He was sort of, and I wonder if he was sort of dragged into the Iraq War a bit by the fact that, obviously George W. Bush wanted to go into Iraq and Tony Blair wanted to maintain the good relations with Iraq and with America and so went in, and it was a huge, huge mistake. and he realises that. But it's like, you know, when you do something terrible and you can't admit to yourself that it was terrible, you know, like you married, you know, a stripper in Las Vegas or something, and you just, you plow on for the next 20 years saying this was a good idea. It was a good thing I married Shaniqua. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe you just bite that. By the way, how are things with you and Shaniqua? Are you still
great?
Talking?
They're absolutely fantastic. And I mean that. And I'll never apologise.
It does. I'm glad to hear it. It proves ultimately, I suppose, if you're going to apologise, that has to come, as you say, the mea culpa has to be swift.
Yeah.
The key to an apology is sincerity, worded well, and the timing. I mean, as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah. Because people do terrible apologies these days, especially comedians. They've offended somebody. They say, I'm sorry if anybody was offended. Instead of, I'm sorry, I was offensive.
Yeah. I mean, where do you stand on that? Now, you are a very funny Scots comedian. Where are you from in Scotland, by the way?
Near Dumfries.
Okay. Which bit is that? Where's that?
It's like southwest.
Okay. Does that mean, does that make you, is that west coast and a kind of slightly Glasgow vibe, or east coast, or is it all by itself?
Yeah,
separate?
It's sort of west coast.
Yeah.
West coast,
You've got, you know, I mean, your comedy is, you know, there are times when it's close to the edge. I think you like to play with the envelope. You go to that line, you don't really cross it, but you like to get very close to that line, which actually audiences need that, don't they?
It makes it sort of exciting.
Yeah. And so where do you stand on the likes of Jimmy Carr and Frankie Boyle, who have really sort of earned a reputation from maybe crossing that line?
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Carr sort of does quite cruel, quite nasty gags sometimes without much justification. Frankie Boyle, on the other hand, he does cruel, nasty gags, but he's got huge justification for doing so. He's usually making a really good point about something, or it's just funny. It's just so funny. People say, how can he do it? It's because it's funny.
Yeah.
You're allowed to do it if it's funny.
If
it's a bad gag, if it's not, like, the audience knows, the audience won't laugh. It's something that's, you know, genuinely too mean. You know what I mean? The audience knows.
Well, there's that big difference, isn't there? It's between a joke which is maybe a pretty obscene or dark, whatever, which gets a laugh, and another that gets an ooh.
Yeah.
And if your stock in trade is just shocking people and getting an ooh, that's not really comedy, is it?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I mean, maybe you're allowed one or two of those per show, but predominantly, yes, I suppose maybe the thing for someone like Frankie Boyle is he has the moral fig leaf of satire.
Yeah.
That most of his jokes contain a satirical point.
Yeah, and he's making a sort of higher point. Like, I remember he got in trouble for a joke that he made about, you know, he's learning Israeli self-defense. He was learning Krav Maga. He said, I now know 16 ways to kick an unarmed Palestinian woman in the back.
Right.
And he got in trouble for that, but he's making a wider point about the way, you know, Israel treats the sort of occupied territories.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I suppose the only time he came unstuck is when he maybe didn't have that fig leaf of satire, if he's talking about Rebecca Adlington and not thinking she's pretty.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a kind of mean thing to say.
It's not really that's not really in the public interest.
She wasn't like invading Lebanon or anything, you know what I mean? She's just a swimmer.
We still laughed. Yeah, it's 12:52 and you're listening to this. We've got a guy who's been paid to say this.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
It's FUBAR Radio, and we're on to our last bite of the cherry here on Mark Dolan Eats the News. With me in the studio is the comedian Leo Kurse, at Comedy Leo is his Twitter handle. Let's talk about jacuzzis. From Marilyn Monroe's ornate jacuzzi, thank you, to Mike Tyson's mirrored ceilings, photos reveal the luxurious interiors of celebrities' lavish bathrooms. This is a piece in the Mail Online, and they have revealed what we always knew all along, which is that in a way, you can tell a lot about somebody by their lavatory and bathroom, but also the fact that the ultimate sign of bling is how many bathrooms you have in your house and just how much marble is packed into it and jacuzzis and all the rest of it. And Marilyn Monroe's is just completely, you know, sort of luxurious, just gold taps and marble floors and all the rest of it. Then you've got Mike Tyson, whose bathroom is basically sort of almost in the garden of his sprawling estate, which clearly is in the hands of receivers now. It's his ex-bathroom. But, yeah, what is it about rich people and bathrooms, because what I just don't understand how you can have more bathrooms than bedrooms.
Yeah, and also, I mean, would you feel comfortable? I mean, these bathrooms are larger than like several London flats put together. They are vast. You could have a game of football in these bathrooms.
Yeah.
Would you feel comfortable sitting on the toilet in a space that big? I like being in a small private space. I wouldn't feel comfortable sitting in this massive hall.
I agree, you'd feel self-conscious, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I know, you'd feel like as you're on the loo, you need to maybe do a little performance or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to justify the space.
Yeah, yeah,
somehow.
Yeah.
Somehow. You are courting at the moment. Although
yes.
I asked you about it during one of the records, and you had this look which was hashtag it's complicated. So, you know what I mean? Because I know how you roll. You like, you know, let's, you know, you're a man of the world, aren't you, Leo Kurse? But with you and your other half, can you... Because I'm thinking, I'm very lucky, miraculously, I am married to a lovely lady, and I know that she would like it a lot more if we had separate bathrooms.
Right, right, yeah.
Because she doesn't enjoy watching me on the loo.
Yeah, and is your bathroom...
With my ablutions.
Is your bathroom...
Especially not with the IBS, which really... in the winter, it flares up.
All right, that's nice. Yeah, and is your... Because the thing, I mean, a lot of... I see flats advertised with... I'm lucky. I share with 9 people. We live in a warehouse. The bathroom's been built out of chipboard, which is now all soggy, and it smells. There's holes in the
wall.
Are
you living with... Is your roommate Swampy?
Basically, yeah. Basically, yeah. I'm like Gordon Gekko compared to my flatmates, you know what I mean?
That's fantastic.
By which I mean I'm old.
Oh, no, never. And how does it... So it pans out quite well in your accommodation, does it?
Literally, in the bathroom, it pans out. So, yeah, I mean, it's but it's fine. It's like the bathroom's filthy, so I don't have to feel bad about making a mess or making a bad smell. But with girls, I found, like, there's a lot of places, especially when you go on holiday, you've got the ensuite bathroom. An ensuite bathroom is the worst. Like, who wants an ensuite bathroom? So you're behind a door, 5 feet away from your betrothed, trying to quietly... Do your business. You don't want that. You want a bathroom miles
for
away.
For men in our prime, like, that's a lot of business to do.
Lot of business. That's
especially if you've been married for many years.
And you've got IBS.
You have to entertain yourself after a while. Before I let you go, I've got 2 really quick ones for you. Prince Harry has been in the United States promoting the Invictus Games, which is a games there to raise money and awareness for disabled soldiers.
Right.
Turns out, right, here's my question. Prince Harry, actually quite a good bloke. Discuss.
Yeah, I mean, you got to compare him to the company that he keeps, and compared to the rest of him, he is. He seems like a human being. I like that. Maybe it's because, you know, there is a dispute over who his real father is, and maybe, you know, he's not inherited the sort of royal genes.
We like the fact that one of the royals could easily be on the Jeremy Kyle show.
It would be a fantastic episode.
You know, he's
imagine?
Got enough of a checkered family background that he'd sit quite comfortably with any number of men who could be his father with tattoos in the background. Just
and
looking
Prince
aggressive.
Charles comes on and tries to lamp James Hewitt. That would be an amazing show.
I tell you what, this has been an amazing show. Leo Kurse, thank you for joining us on FUBAR Radio. This has been Mark Dolan Eats the News. This is a lovely record, and this is Change the Way You Kiss Me, something Ollie Murs failed to do with Janet Street Porter on Loose Women. See you next week.
Never been afraid of the highest heights, or afraid of flying. I have never been afraid of the wildest fights, not afraid of dying. But now I'm off this ride, cause you're scaring me, and I don't like where we're going. Now you're gonna miss me. I know you're gonna miss me. I guarantee you'll miss me. Cause you changed the way you kiss me. Jack Jones looking for a way back home, but I can't get
never been afraid of the highest heights, or afraid of flying. I have never been afraid.